go. Head on to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Am I the only one in America who is sick to death of the word czar? God, that's just disgusting. Hey, where's the bailout czar? Where's the Wall Street bailout czar? Aw, damn, guess it doesn't rhyme with car, so it's not cute enough. Good God, we've got a drug czar and a cheese Danish czar. And now we're going to have us a car czar. Do these fools even understand the origin of the word? Where are you when I need you, Eugene Finnerman? A republic based upon principles of representative democracy does not need anything within its body called czar. Or Tsar, or Kaiser, or Caesar, as one might presume that the ancient Romans pronounced old Gaius Julius' name. It's sickening. It's a sickening linguistic sort of torment on the same level as that other noxious weed of a word, homeland. I'll be homeland for Christmas. Nah, see, it doesn't work. That's not to say that some oversight might not well be called for in this instance, but really, oh, maybe I'm overreacting. But can we not just run that miserable old word out of respectable usage? Czar. It implies a person with unlimited power. Lawless power. Power over life and death of others. Free to turn the Cossacks loose to start a new pogrom and go a-rippin' and a-ridin' and a-sniffin' and a-snortin' through the village and put the peasants to the sword. Doesn't it? Kind of does. A czar. You know, when I hear the word czar bandied about, it tells me that the problem is not being taken seriously. Quick, history buffs, the super fast internet research people. Where did this word first come into common usage in the government of we, the people who are actively engaged in trying to form a more perfect union? Where did that, and the person who, why wasn't that person laughed at? You want to call yourself the what? Oh, move along, Tavarich. A czar? Are we pining for the good old days before the October 1917 revolution? Is that what it is? Energy czar? Sure. Czars. You know, they didn't have the best track record. Absolute monarchs with absolute power. making absolute nightmares. Oh, sure, you had an enlightened one here and there. So-called Peter the Great. But he had as much downside as he had up. I'm sure that by tomorrow we will probably have because I think Eugene listens in delay, we will have the full update on Tsarness. Catherine was said to be enlightened. Was it Catherine that hired John Paul Jones after his run with the fledgling United States Navy? Of course, I suppose she was a Tsarina. But in every sense of the word, even the positive, non-pejorative sense of the word, as originally envisioned by both the Greeks and the Romans, tyrannus and dictator, persons vested with the ability to wield absolute power. We'd never refer, although I think George Bush probably thought of himself as one, we'd never refer to a president of the United States as any kind of a czar. Why in God's name do we refer to someone working under the president as a czar? See, I'm one of these people that doesn't much like royalty. Anybody who thinks that they get to sit on a better chair because of the accident of their birth, I don't want anything to do with them. Well, Bob, you know, the car czar doesn't really think. Yes, he does. I know Mark Levine just pointed out that the car czar will have limited power until February when Obama can get his own car czar in. But still, it's a car czar, and there are powers. Here's the way CNN Money is describing the car czar. You know, this is all. I think this is all obsequiousness toward the for-profit-only media to give them cute headlines. Car czar offers bankruptcy light. You know, totally tubular. The big three automakers, according to CNNMoney.com, the big three automakers say bankruptcy is not an option, and it may not have to be if they get their federal bailout. But that doesn't mean there won't be strings attached or someone to pull them. In the bailout plan, the president would appoint a car czar, and this is probably the only reason that Dear Leader is even willing to think about it.
What? I get to employ. Wait a minute. I'm such a lame duck. I can't flap with neither wings, and I'm lame in one webbed foot, and they're still going to give me the power to appoint somebody to bust the unions? Hot damn it, don't get no better than being me.
In the bailout plan, the president would appoint a car czar, which could be an individual or the head of a panel, to write the guidelines for $15 billion in stopgap loans due by January 1st, and then essentially set the terms for and oversee the restructuring of any car maker that takes a loan. Well, that's a mouthful of gobbledygook, and God only knows what it means. He's going to sit down and write his own rules. You know what? When you sit down, you write your own rules as you go along. Help me here. I'm thinking that's anarchy. Oh, granted, you know, the car czar won't have a hoodie and be turning over mailboxes or nothing. But that's not anarchy in the first place. That's just the hoodlumism. But it is. It's anarchy. It is action without the benefit of oversight. Set the terms for and oversee the restructuring of any car maker that takes one of the loans. And here's the final paragraph, and this is the one that sort of that makes my belly make all kinds of funny noises. The plan also gives the car czar, you know, I'm surprised it doesn't have a little circle with TM outside it, or R, or marca registrada. The plan also gives the car czar extraordinary powers. You know, I get a little nervous every time I see the word extraordinary put in front of the word powers. Star Chamber, the court of Star Chamber, where you could be hauled into a little secret room and tried without being able to present your case or defend yourself in any way, and next thing you know, they were dragging you out of the room, trip to the Tower of London, a little bit later, you lost your head. Those are extraordinary powers. Decapitation, that's an extraordinary remedy. Extraordinary powers to compel what are being described as interested parties. I must say, if an interesting monster can't have an interesting hairdo, I don't know what the world's coming to. Bobby Pence, please. Oh, that's never going to work. You're going to have a permanent. Interested parties in the industry. And interested parties means lenders, auto dealers, and union. Oh, dang, I was right. Union representatives. The plan also gives the Karzar extraordinary powers to compel interested parties in the industry, lenders, auto dealers, and union representatives to make concessions. Really? Kidding, right? To make concessions. This is just a little one of those moments with my tattered robe with the moons and stars on it, my magic eight ball with a crack in the window that constantly says, answer hazy, ask again later. But I'm guessing that any Karzar appointed by a lame duck president who has had no accountability demanded of him by the sitting Congress, who is a short-timer in every sense of the word, and Lord knows the time cannot draw short enough to suit me and many of you. We're going to trust him to appoint a guy who's going to exercise limited authority between now and February? Oh, Congress is only going to give him limited authority. Excuse me? Have I just transported into some sort of alternate universe where none of this happened? Or do I recall that George Bush used to do things like appending these things called signing statements to legislation passed by the Congress? You know, those signing statements that said, the Congress can go piss up a rope. I'm going to do whatever I want to. What are you going to do? Impeach me? You bunch of sissies. Nope, same universe. That happened. But this time, you know, George is on the way out. Suddenly he loves America again. He's I don't know, richer than a Christmas Lane cake. And this time, he's not going to do anything sneaky or skullduggerous or anything like that. Right. What color is the sky in their world? We're talking about a criminal of the First Order. We're talking about a guy whose Veterans Administration, to recap from last night, paid your money to Kellogg, Brown, and Root. Kellogg, Brown, and Root. It was formerly owned by Halliburton. Paid money to Kellogg, Brown, and Root. Kellogg, Brown, and Root. It kind of sticks after a while, I got to tell you. Paid money to that outfit to fill trucks with ice and put putrefying corpses on top of the ice until they got wherever the corpses were going, and then they offloaded the ice and gave it to our soldiers. Woo! Yeah, the government that did all that kind of stuff, they'd never do anything slippery with the Karzar, now would they? No! Bob, you're such a cynic. It was only 8 long, miserable, tormented, tortured, unconstitutional, unelected years that the Bush administration was doing all this. Can't you just let go of your hate, Bob? I will let go of my hate when they let go of my country. How's that? Deal? I mean, does it work for you? Because, see, let's see. Auto dealers making concessions that are going to amount to billions of dollars. Lenders? They're going to make a lender make a concession. Oh, God, that's a cutie. How many concessions did AIG make? You know, when we bailed them out and they were off partying it to the tune of $500,000 at a posh resort in California that wouldn't probably let us in the back door, let alone the front. Hell, we probably couldn't survive the background check to let us sweep the floors at the resort where play organizations like AIG party. But suddenly it's all going to be okay. Because this isn't that. I mean, after 8 years of George Bush and his rotten, stinking, illegal, corrupt administration, after 8 years of that, the Bush administration wouldn't do anything slippery like putting some sort of anti-union punk into the position who would take those extraordinary powers we talked about a moment ago and look at the UAW and say, you know, boys, you're going to have to give up that strike fund. I hear there's $1 billion in it. You're going to have to give that up. Yeah. And that health care you got, that's got to go too. Now, granted, there's a few retiree wives out there, and they may have breast cancer or uterine cancer or something like that. But you know what? For the good of the company and the good of the country, they need to give up that health care. And you see, the word of the car czar will be almighty God law, because remember, the car czar gets to write his own rules. Nice racket. Nice union-busting racket. I strongly suggest that the members of the United Auto Workers go pick up a copy of their history. Because you're going to have to get, if you're a member of the UAW, there's a day coming when you're going to have to get down and dirty with where you came from. And you're going to have to get up close and personal with the blood that was shed in places like Flint, Michigan, for you by a previous generation or two. You're going to have to get on speaking terms with the history of folks like Walter Reuther, who brooked no crap from the masters of the universe and the captains of industry, and demanded that working people be treated like, oh, I don't know what, working people with, you know, human dignity. Car czar. That's just creepy. But what else could we call him? Come on, chat room, help out a little bit here. What could we call him? What do we call him in the Fed, in the money world? Oh, we call him the chairman of the Fed. Yeah. Car czar. You know who I'd try? As far as now, Lord only knows. Did you know? I mean, I realize this program comes on during some folks' supper time, so please bear with me for a minute, because you might want to get a little dose of that political paregoric out. Because this is not going to sit well at all with you. There are wingnuts out there who are suggesting. That wingnut is Fred Barnes. Fred Barnes is suggesting of course, where else? Fox News. Fred Barnes is suggesting that the very guy to be the car czar, oh, well, listen for yourself. This is just disturbing. Think of all the people you wouldn't want to be the car czar. I'm guessing the name you're about to hear is probably... It's so ridiculous, it's not even on the list. I mean, it's what? It would be like naming, I don't know, Jesse James to be the head of the FDIC. Just astonishing. No, Fred Barnes, you know, he was clowning and carrying on like Fred Barnes does. But you know what? The one time you really want to keep an eye on these thugs is when they're giggling. Because remember, they giggle when they kill.
Yeah, and that Carla Faye Tucker, she was saying, please don't kill me, please don't kill me. And I killed her.
Or whether they give the cars are that much power or not, I don't know. I have a nominee, Phil Graham.
Yeah, the guy who said that Americans who were, you know, trying to carry this nation on their backs and getting whipped along the way were whiners. Yeah, that Phil Graham. The Phil Graham that invented so much of this problem that we've got to begin with. Fred Barnes would just love to see him be the car czar. You know, because he's an economist. You remember when we went over that? Phil Graham's economics thesis was 37 pages long? 67 pages long? Geez, most of the economic types that I've ever known can't write, hello, this is my economics thesis, in less than 115 pages. But the cars, but this guy, and by the way, there were no numbers in Phil Graham's little dodgy little PhD thesis either. I have a nominee, Phil Graham. But here's the fun part. Listen to the rest of the exchange.
Senses he might not, the Obama administration might not accept him.
They'd have to.
Huh?
Or whether they give the car.
Wait. Britt Hume, that smug bastard, says one senses the Obama administration might not accept him. Fred Barnes, they have to. Why? Why? I mean, if God forbid something like that should happen, or whoever the car czar is, and I don't know what else to call this guy because they're only calling him a car czar. There's got to be some sort of reasonable, rational name we could give him with or her within the government. But no, it's going to be the car czar. Dem leader's going to appoint himself a car czar, and what Fred Barnes is saying is that the Obama administration can like it or lump it. See, I'm at a point after 8 years where I wouldn't trust George W. Bush with a dead skunk. For fear of what he might do with it. Among other things, some explanations coming along about the car czar. The auto plan gives the auto czar... Oh, he's an auto czar now. I guess he can czar himself. Hey, go czar yourself. Well, I guess that kind of has a different meaning with regard to Catherine the Great, doesn't it? The auto plan gives the auto czar the absolute ability to decide if he or she likes the auto restructuring plan presented by the big three, and if the czar doesn't, the loans can be immediately recalled. Wow. Talk about your sword of Damocles. But here's little bitty beads of sweat that form at your hairline and dribble down your face at 3 o'clock in the morning and make you sort of wake up in a nightmarish, wondering which world you're in. The person does not answer to Congress and is chosen by the current president, George W. Bush. This is from Ian Welch. Ian Welch says, as best I can tell, the next president will not be able to fire him. Though Obama could ask for his resignation, I guess. Ian Welch also says, I don't think the Karzar would have to give it, however. Judge, jury, and executioner. Don't we have some just pre-existing problems with a notion like that? I mean, that really is a czar, isn't it? Maybe that's why they're using the word. This guy really can turn loose the financial thugs with their sharpened blades to descend on Detroit and start killing the auto industry. And I don't think anything could be more of a gift for the Republican Party. Well, Barack Obama done took the office there, and look at what happened to the car industry. They all got killed. Yeah, but wait a minute, your cars are that George Bush appointed. He's the one that. No, this is all presidential. That's the president's doing. Buck stops here. You ain't hearing no more of them excuses. Our 8 years of excuse making is over, and you Democrats, you best by God be full of personal responsibility, because that's what y'all do real good. And by the way, was he really born in America? Was Barack Obama, was he really born in America? I don't think so. Because, see, I was reading something on some right-wing blogger the other day where this feller said that he had a tape of somebody saying that Barack Obama's the Kenyan grandma said she was right there in Kenya when Barack Obama was born in Kenya. And then they flew him halfway around the world to Honolulu so as he could be an American. Because even then, as a little bitty newborn, even back when he was nothing but a fetus, Barack Obama was planning on being president. That is how ambitious that man is. It sure enough is. He's not really American. We tried to tell you about that. We tried to tell you about the socialism. Tried to tell you about how he's out there palling around with the terrorists. Now, you remember when they first brought the bailout plan to Washington, the bankers? It was what? They said it was page and a half, 2 pages, 2.5 pages, three pages long. By the time the Congress got done with it, it was 800 pages, and nobody'd read a lick of it. Yeah. So this time through, well, they've got a little plan, but they've got to go do some paperwork on it. This is astonishing. Just amazing. And we're talking about it as if it was somehow acceptable. Wait a minute. All this time, 28 minutes of babble now. There is a word. There is a word for what we're talking about. But there's a process. When a company goes into bankruptcy, Bueller. When a company goes through bankruptcy, sometimes there is a person appointed who is called a receiver, and the company is said to be in receivership. And that person makes decisions similar to what the so-called Karzar is going to make, but makes those decisions with a fiduciary duty. Please bear in mind that the so-called Karzar is not going to have a fiduciary duty to anybody, except maybe the Bush family. And Barack Obama won't even have the power to ditch him? How is this? You still around there, Mark Levine? How could a law like this possibly survive constitutional muster? Well, you know what? The Karzar have made a determination that all you old folks that busted your ass, y'all don't need them pensions no more. We're gonna turn them over to debt service for the loans that we done give through the Karzar. Is this bothering you as much as it bothers me? Talk about putting the foxes in charge of the hen house. That gum. A loyal Bushy is going to be put, because George Bush doesn't appoint non-loyal Bushies. Good God. A loyal Bushy is going to be put in charge of the entire economy. Because that's what's, or at least the entire manufacturing economy, because Detroit is pretty much what we have left. What we have left of the manufacturing base in this country. But he'll be on the square with it, even if he won't have a fiduciary duty or anything to stop him from being an absolutely predatory marauder. Mind-boggling. And that's just the beginning of the program. Now, we got the whole thing blowing up in Illinois today. Memo to governors. Being governor is not a license to run your stupid fool mouth off and have your mouth writing checks that your butt can't cash. Or so it seems to me.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Oops, maybe the wrong one. There it is. This is America's liberal voice, listener supported. This is the horn.
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV calls her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? But one ain't here still. Chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how it feels. But that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio. Wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you ever saw. Circles on the floor, round and round just like before. Baby, fall down, baby, get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup.
Lordy, I love that song. Couldn't resist. Just well, it seemed to fit, and it fit not just in reverse coming out of, because for all they hate it, and for as astonishing as it may seem, the right wing, holy cow, the right wing has that Ferris taste of blood in their mouths, and to them it tastes like victory. Richard Shelby, that once upon a time conservative Democrat, who's now just a sickening hypocritical puke in the Senate of the United States, said, "Oh, you know, we can't be bailing out," and yet at the same time gave millions of dollars and encouraged in a state that didn't have the tax revenue to give, Alabama, to bring in Mercedes and the likes of them. Lordy. Hates him some welfare. Hates it. But can't wait to put the United Auto Workers out on the street and put them precisely into that situation. But, of course, it's not just, you know, well, it's all over the place, because the right wing owns the so-called public airwaves. This creepy guy named Rick Roberts was filling in for the Savage Wiener recently, namely yesterday. And he had some advice for Savage Nation listeners. In a minute, you'll understand why I played that song.
Look, I've got a pretty radical announcement to make right now. All right, are you sitting down? Are you driving in the slow lane? I want conservatives and Christians to not give to charities this Christmas. Yeah, I said not give to charities this Christmas. That's right. I want conservatives and Christians to stop donating your money, with one exception. Anything to help the military is fine, because God knows the government isn't doing their fair share.
Well, come on, Rick. The government's doing their fair share. We're paying, we've dumped the entire national treasury into organizations like Kellogg Burn and Loot. And we know what they did. I guess it, you know, after what Kellogg Burn and Loot did in Iraq with the ice and the putrefying corpses and stuff, it gives a whole new meaning to that ancient and semi-respectable cocktail with the fruit and the umbrellas in it called the zombie now, doesn't it? Ugh. But anyway, that's just a sidebar.
You know, I've given this a lot of thought, and I believe the right thing to do this Christmas is not to give. Don't give to the homeless shelters or the soup kitchens or this or that. Now, many of you may already be cutting back on your giving this year. I know you are. You have to be. Then you may be feeling guilty about it. Well, you know, gosh, I couldn't give as much as I wanted to give and couldn't give as much as I have in years past. But I'm here to tell you, drop the guilt.
Drop dead! But don't worry, we haven't gotten to the fun part yet. This guy is up to his filthy chin in nothing but unmitigated hate. This is going to absolutely take you apart when you hear where he's going. Do you already know? I hope not.
Get rid of it. You are doing the right thing by not giving. Don't feel guilty about keeping your money to take care of you and your family. That's your first responsibility. Now, here's why I'm asking Christians and conservatives not to give this holiday.
Because Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, said, keep everything for yourself, and that will assure you a place in the kingdom of heaven. Right? Maybe not. Maybe not.
Right? I'm not trying to be cold-hearted. I'm not trying to be Grinch. I'm just trying to wake people up. Wake up. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be heartless or cruel. I'm trying to...
No, you're just being a right-wing gas bag who will say any rotten piece of crap that comes into his mind as long as his corporate masters think that it's bringing in audience. Just so we're clear.
To get people to open their eyes, if your eyes haven't been opened, about the economic events and the political events of the last 3, 4, 5, 6 months. When you get hit up for charities this Christmas season, now again, the only addendum to this is anything for the military is absolutely top of the list. But everybody else, you need to remember most of that money goes into either A, the pockets of people who run the charities, or B, drug addicts, deadbeats on welfare who have nothing to contribute.
It's going to be a little bit difficult for me to get all the way through this clip. No, most of the money doesn't go into the pockets of those who run the charities. That's an outright lie. You know, there's a rating agency out there that specifically, if you look it up, will tell you, to the extent that organizations participate, will tell you how much of donor dollars goes into administration of the organization versus how much actually goes to the cause in question. So that, you know, but these are right-wingers, and this is how they lie, and I guess we're used to that by now. Or deadbeats. You know, deadbeats. People who, well, not that I'm saying that it was any great loss, but this William Jefferson character who lost his election in Louisiana recently, you realize that seat hadn't been held by a pig-licking for 120 years? 120 years. However, if you can use a storm that was tracking at about 15 miles an hour up the Gulf that gave the Bush administration plenty of time to get stuff in line, but they chose not to, if you can use that as the excuse for depopulating an entire congressional district, you know, William Jefferson said, well, I guess our people just didn't turn out. No, Congressman Jefferson, they didn't turn out because they weren't there. They've been relocated. New Orleans has been ethnically cleansed. Your voters, your electorate weren't there. And all the little mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, pig-lickings, just hoppity-hoppity-hoppity-hoppity, right out to the polls, and next thing you know, they got him a pig-licking member of Congress. Hoo-wee! Oh, that's going to be good for the recovery of New Orleans. Bring on some free market! But never mind. All those people who were blown away, blown out, as a result of Katrina, who were relocated as a result of Katrina, who have been living in trailers and breathing formaldehyde fumes as a result of Katrina on the Gulf Coast and New Orleans. They're just drug addicts, deadbeats, and bums. Drug addicts, deadbeats, and bums. Hallelujah. Praise, praise, praise. How do they get away? Do you know anybody, honestly, tell me, email, phone call, whatever, do you know anybody who finds this to be compelling radio? Obviously, he's already said, you know, hey, Republicans, conservatives, are you driving in the slow lane? Yeah, and probably licking the windshield while they're at it. That's the mentality you're dealing with there, Rick Roberts. They are, after all, conservatives. They believe you. But do you know any of these people? Well, I never miss an episode of the Savage Nation. Well, that's some fine radio. but just to finish this up, and then I'll try to move on if I possibly can.
To their own lives, let alone societies. Give to your own family. Take care of your own responsibility. The economy's a drag. People know that. People are down on their luck. It's getting worse. But
look out for your own butt and never the butt of your neighbor, because we're all lone wolves in this free market miracle. We don't have communities anymore. You stay in your house and you look at your little TV altar and listen to what the man tells you to think, and then you go about, and if you've got the ability left to think, you think on it some more. That's my job here, you know, right-wing talk host, to tell you how to think, because being a conservative, you don't know how to do it by yourself. You're on your own. Take care of your own. You see somebody starving on the corner, kick them to that curb! Because, you know, it says right there in the book of Matthew, I was hungry, and you kicked me to the curb. I was naked, and you kicked me to the curb. I was in prison, and you kicked me to the curb. And just as you kicked me to the curb, so I will welcome you into heaven for being a good conservative. No, it doesn't say that, does it?
Not everyone gives up and buries their sorrows in a bottle or a bailout plan. Some people actually work harder, try harder, study harder. Give to those people. Help those.
What does he want of people? How much harder can the American people work? Even wingnuts. How much harder can we work? Working people in this country do not even have guaranteed to them the basic minimum labor standards that are guaranteed in the rest of the civilized world. We work harder for less money and longer hours than anybody else in the so-called first industrialized world. There's a couple of weeks paid vacation, maybe more, depending on where you start in most European countries. And civilized Pacific, not civilized, but advanced Pacific Rim countries? Us? No. Hell, it was a humongous leap forward that we got the Family Medical Leave Act passed, and that's not even paid. You have a medical emergency or a medical crisis in your family, it can take you apart if it takes longer than this conservatively written piece of legislation says you can be gone. A window plant in Chicago can shutter its windows and close its doors and not even pay people what they are due and owing. And it's fine by these right-wing thug punks. And yet, in all of this, we still haven't gotten to the nastiest part.
Those who are trying to help themselves. Besides, in the final analysis, Obama's going to come to the welfare crowd's defense anyway, which brings me to my third reason not to give to charities this holiday.
Here it is.
Holiday season. Politics. Politics. You're going to wish you kept some of that money for yourself and your loved ones come tax season. That's when our new president's Uber welfare state's going to kick in. And you're going to wish you kept some of that money. So you may as well start an Obama savings account right now so that that welfare mom can have her new plasma TV as she pops kids out like a Pez dispenser.
You know how it is with them people. They just breed like rats. They're animals.
Now, see, he doesn't make the overt reference, but welfare mother, welfare mom, new plasma TV, kids like a Pez dispenser. Anybody want to guess what color Rick Roberts is? Because if that man doesn't sunburn under a refrigerator light bulb, I'll be tempted to eat a piece of haberdashery. You know, we play and we carry on, we poke and we the sharp stick, the right wing. But I don't have it in me to actually, with very few exceptions, manifest overt, ill-wishing hate on people. This guy does. This guy does.
Welfare mom can have her new plasma TV if she pops kids out like a Pez dispenser.
When did having kids become a cash crop? And it's going to get worse.
Wait a minute. I thought you said all the little fetuses were sacred, you right-wing freak.
When did having kids become a cash crop?
Oh, maybe when you spent the last 30 years soliciting donations from ignorant right-wing knuckle-walking mouth-breathing goobers who think that fetuses are more important than living, breathing human beings. Gotta have all the babies! Them's Jesus's fetuses!
Holy smoke. If you need another reason why Christians and conservatives should stop giving, here it is. I've had enough. I've had enough. Have you? I've had enough of the liberals and their name-calling. I've had enough of the attacks on churches, Mormon temples, Jewish synagogues. I've had enough of their hatred and spouting that our God doesn't exist.
Spouting? Spouting? I didn't know I was spouting. I thought I was arguing from reason. I mean, like we kind of said, there's never been a medical test devised that can find a little bitty chunk of Jesus meat in anybody's belly after they eat the cracker. There just isn't. And, you know, it's spouting, I guess, if you actually know the history of the church and the history of various and sundry religions. But we're not allowed to criticize that anymore.
Oh, liberals are spouting.
You know what these are? As annoying this as these right-wing thugs are, what these are? These are the ravings of a person on the way out. In my heart of hearts, I pray that their sun has set, that their race is run, and their day is done, and they have come in dead last. This is all they've got. Hating people for not having as much money as they do. That's not a reflection on the poor people. That's a reflection on him. Sure enough. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Preston.
Thanks so much for this important presentation of this guy's shameful work on the radio. And so much agreed and, you know, appreciated how you responded to it all. Amazing. Pathetic.
It is, isn't it? I see this stuff, Preston, and I what's this guy do when he goes home at night?
You said his name's Rick Roberts, and he was filling in for Savage?
Yeah.
Yesterday?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. I want to get the day right for when I reference it in, you know, message boarding or maybe.
The link is right over there, and it's fairly high in the queue. This is more of the brilliant work that folks at Media Matters do.
Great. Okay.
So, you know, you can link directly to the audio. And, of course, you know, these people always say, well, you know, you've taken me out of context.
Right.
That was two minutes and 32 seconds worth of context.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing to miss in that.
Or some of his supporters will say, oh, he's just an entertainer.
Well, and to that I got to say to those people who support this stuff, what kind of pathology is happening in your brain that you find that stuff entertaining?
Right. Exactly. You know, I'm curious as to what sort of response he got as well. I mean, I wonder if these people maybe are on their way out. I mean, it's got to be getting harder and harder for them to go to work and continue this charade.
You know, I'm of two minds on that. I'm of two minds on everything. You know, I'm like that Robert Frost poem where he says, I'm so liberal I won't take my own side in a fight.
I'm at least two minds on things, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
But the reason I say that is these poor, please, these multimillionaires have had a very frustrating 8 years having to carry water for George Bush. From a position of somebody like Rick Roberts or the Savage Wiener or that life support system for a haircut, Hannity, or any of the rest of them, it is far easier to scream at the other side. I mean, look, it must have been a no-brainer to be Flush Flimball going to work during the Clinton years, and all you had to do was spend the hours upon end hollering about Monica Lewinsky and the rule of law.
Yep. I mean, Limbaugh used Lewinsky's blue dress for years. I don't know if you caught that, but he constantly make this crude reference to, stains on her blue dress.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd constantly bring it up. And I'd hear his callers call in, talk about it, get totally wrapped up in it. It was like watching a bullfighter waving a red cape around, but instead it was this blue dress that he could, just manipulate and jerk around his listeners. The guy hates human beings. I saw people dear to my heart get sucked into it, and that's what makes me so furious. And so that's why I collect all these books and DVDs and stuff, just a sort of self-defense and to help others.
That's exactly what it is. And in its own way, Preston, what you do is a vital little piece of community building. As far as I understand it, because you're not letting this filth stand on its own two legs. Mm. You're trying to take it out at the knees, and that's what we all have to do. But my heavenly days, I'm flummoxed when I hear this kind of stuff. Can you imagine? I mean, and beyond the general vileness of it on so many levels, racial, gender. I mean, look, there's nothing in there about welfare dads. It's the welfare moms popping out kids like a Pez dispenser. Well, somebody has to put the Pez into the dispenser before it can get popped.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's gender stuff, there is an implied race issue component to it, but brushing all of that aside, if we even humanly possibly could, what evidence is there, rationally, coolly, logically? You and I are very much progressives, very much liberals. What evidence do we have thus far to suggest that there is anything about Barack Obama that you would call, what was the phrase he used, uber liberal?
Yeah.
Where's the evidence of that?
Right, right. And back to just that comment itself, the facts of the matter are that people on welfare tend to have, 2.3 kids versus 2.1 kids, and people on welfare tend to only be on it for a year and a half on average, or 2 years.
Even if they're on there for five, we kick them to the curb after that and say, "Well, tough luck, starve."
Even if they're on it for their entire lives, some people just have problems fitting into our glorious economic system.
Isn't some of that epistemological though? Isn't some of that definition based? Our dear brother Gene was very, very upset last night about proposed cuts in Oregon that will basically punish people with special needs who need caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how dare we? Not we. How dare they refer to that as welfare? But they do. Anything that is not generated as a function of profit-driven the greed and avarice is, by their estimation and by their lights and in their book, welfare. And it's another case of the failure of our failure to frame things appropriately.
Mm-hmm. That was one sad spot about the past election here in Colorado. We voted down a small sales tax that wasn't even going to apply to food and fuel and basic stuff, but to luxury goods and stuff like that. And it was going to go to a fund to help people with disabilities. You know, once they turn 18, they lose a lot of their support for, you know, trying to work some kind of job or getting home care, help with feeding and stuff like that. And there's this years-long waiting list to get more, to have that support be ongoing after you're 18 and disabled. And we voted that down pretty soundly, which was a shame. But they're going to come back at it, another approach, see what happens. But, yeah, you're absolutely right, Bob. I mean, it's shameful. The attitudes, this empathy impairment that the guys on the right wing try to cultivate daily. And, you know, there's another one on the rampage right now, Michael Medved.
Oh, God.
I saw him on C-SPAN being interviewed by Mona Charon, another lovely writer.
Can't he just go back to reviewing movies poorly?
Yeah, right. I wish, you know. He was on PBS, too, right? I mean, he didn't mind the public broadcast.
No.
He was getting a paycheck.
No more than Flush Flimball minded the ACLU when they were hauling his voluminous bacon out of the fire.
Right. Well, his latest thing is kind of a rehash of what he's been saying over the past 10 years. He has this book called The 10 Big Lies About America. And slavery wasn't all that bad. And it's wrong to call what happened to Native Americans genocide. And it goes on and on and on and on like this, all these denials regarding the Native American genocide. What he says is this, you know, a lot of them died from diseases, you know, not so much Sand Creek Massacre, Wounded Knee Massacre, and so many
Trail of Tears.
Yep. Is diseases. Well, following his logic, a lot of the Jews who were in the concentration camps, the Nazis weren't responsible for, because they were dying of tuberculosis and pneumonia, right?
Yeah, sure.
But, see, Medved can apply this sort of twisted logic, and he knows he's playing games, rhetorical games with his audience. You know, it's just like the Heritage Foundation and AEI and all these corporate propaganda firms are just feeding them these lines. You know, how do we absolve ourselves of responsibility? How do we attack the most poor and call ourselves, you know, righteous Christians and conservatives? These people have nothing to do with being conservatives.
What do they conserve? Well, I guess they conserve their money.
Yeah. Conserve elite power and privilege and the warfare state. You know, that was nice of Rick to suggest people do send their money to the military, because they only got $670 billion this year, not counting the Afghan and Iraq war profiteering.
Well, I think that's practically with your face pressed against a window pane watching everybody have all the fun inside the Tony restaurant now, isn't it?
Right.
You know, the stuff, and this, you know, this latest round that still the image is inside my brain, Preston, of corpses being carried on ice and the ice being recycled to our troops, that's not going to leave for a while. That just goes on the list with serving rotting meat and bloody stuff and vegetables laying in puddles of filth in Halliburton kitchens, and $29 a day.
Yeah, and toxic water and...
Sure, you know, what's a little... What's
electrocuted in their showers.
Yeah, what's a little hexavalent chromium among friends?
Yep. Yeah.
But, you know, they're not, but, you know, I was inclined to say something about his references to, you know, give to the military. But the fact of the matter is, what passes for giving to the military among these things, isn't anything the military needs. You know, there are people in Iraq who desperately need, you know, at one point, do you remember they were saying, you know, please just send crates of baby wipes.
Yeah.
Send feminine hygiene products. Yeah. Send suntan lotion. The things that. But what is the right wing? Oh, we sent you a Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's what passes for giving to the military among the right wing.
So even that is suspect. Right. You know, I go ahead.
A Bible and a copy of Michael Savage's Savage Nation book, or you know, liberalism,
or a DVD, you know,
book,
yeah, or maybe from the American Family Association, a copy of Silencing the Christians.
Yeah, or the latest edition of the Left Behind.
Yeah, sure, but meanwhile, there's nothing in that little ditty box about all the Christians in Iraq who got silenced as a direct result of our war.
Yeah, and yeah.
You know, oldest Christian community on the planet, that kind of thing.
Yep. Threw their society into chaos. And there's Hannity saying we liberated them.
Makes you want to scream, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Well, you know, David just wrote in from Tennessee, Preston, and he says, you know, please remember that President-elect Obama's tax increases are for those making over $250,000, if they were even put in place. But the fact of the matter is, he said, you know, he just wants to let the Bush tax cuts expire. So we're kind of back to my, you know, needing some liberalism here. But anyway, David says, so Mr. Roberts is preaching greed to people making over $250,000 a year. And he says, but then again, that is the Republican base now, isn't it?
Yep.
But there aren't that many people making that kind of money in this country. And that brings me back to my fundamental inquiry, Preston. Who listens to this and buys it? I'm behind the eight ball on this because I don't know anybody who does. Those people are in the main, for the most part, out of my life now. For good or ill.
Yeah. I think, you know, like most con men, they'll use something else to pull them into to other cons. And I think, you know, what the format offers, and I think Savage is on a couple hundred stations at least, it offers a sort of virtual community to people. You know, they can hear this voice. It's kind of spontaneous. It takes calls. So it's sort of interactive. But, so there's that appeal to a lot of isolated people, a lot of people over the road. This is the only thing they're able to tune in. Or it's what, you know, that's certainly more so in the past, though. See, that's changing, too, I think, with satellite radio, Air America, you know, with all its flaws.
Mm-hmm.
There are these other options.
Well, even phone networks, you know, you can get the horn via your iPhone now, and last I checked, we're still on the was it Ericsson or no? I think it's the Nokia network. You can grab us on your cell phone that way. And so you know the paradigms are very definitely shifting, Preston. But it's going to take time for that shift to come into full flower, and in the meantime. How do you combat this kind of bile?
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess another one of the appeals has been, I don't know, they're just poking something, you know, the worst parts of our human nature. But I think, part of the way to combat it is encourage the better parts of human nature. Again, the work of people like Alfie Cohn, the brighter side of human nature, to let people see people thinking compassionately, you know, and acting on it. I don't know. It's a lot more fun than this kick 'em to the curb attitude.
Well, it is, and I love the complete lack of understanding of anything about Christianity. That's evinced in this clip from Rick Roberts. I've had enough. Have you? I've had enough of the liberals and their name calling. I've had enough of the attacks on churches, Mormon temples, Jewish synagogues. I've had enough of their hatred and spouting that our God doesn't exist. If you need another reason why Christians and conservatives should stop giving, here it is. And yet, in all, assuming for a moment that there's accuracy within Matthew, Mark, and Luke, at all, there's not a blessed thing in there about not loving someone not giving to someone unless they ascribe to your political belief. It's simply not there. And in fact, if you want to get you know, I mean, this is like religious and philosophical parlor tricks. Get down and dirty with the concepts of love that are evinced by Socrates in Plato's Symposium, and lay them side by side with what Jesus says. Because they both say the same thing, only Socrates does it more didactically, Socratic method and all. He said, if you love your enemy, you're doing the right thing, right? Well, if you love someone who loves you, that's easy, right? Yeah. And you hate your enemies, right? Right. Because they're your enemy, right? But that calls nothing of us. There's no work in loving those who love us.
Mm-hmm.
It's in how we respond to the people who do not.
Yeah. And it's tough. That's our practice, I think, in many ways.
And 500 years later, you got the same thing coming out of a day laborer in the deserts of Judea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much harder than people let on. This is, you know, this stuff that he's passing off as Christianity is nothing but an excuse for hate. You know, mm-hmm. Our synagogues, our Mormon temples. Oh, I'm sorry. I've had enough of the attacks on churches, Mormon temples, Jewish synagogues. Well, who's attacking the Jewish synagogues, Preston?
Right.
It's not a bunch of liberals. It's generally people with white sheets over their head who talk about the godlike Aryan qualities that they themselves possess. And I guarantee you, they're not out there knocking on doors for liberal causes.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, if you're a right-wing blatherhead, you can just conflate all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you come up with this toxic stew of hate and disgust. And of course, the enforcement of fear of the other. You know, even though we touched on it and moved on, I'm still stunned by the misogyny in this. To describe any human being as producing children as, his words, not mine, a cash crop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last time I heard children referred to as a cash crop, I was reading a brilliant piece of satire by Jonathan Swift called A Modest Proposal, in which he advocated eating little Irish children.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't satire, though. His was. They really do think that there's a class of people who are just spit out, and yet at the same time, these soulless Republicans want to talk about the fact that, you gotta haul yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yep.
But they don't even want them to have the damn boots, Preston.
Right. Right. And, you know, this attitude towards the poor, it extends globally as well. I mean, when you start to bring up global issues and issues of children starving and things like that, almost reflexively, almost immediately, someone will say, well, you know, we give so much to them. And we know we give so much foreign aid to them. And, you know, they need to stop having so many kids and all that kind of stuff. When the truth of the matter is, a lot of our so-called aid is stuff to develop infrastructures for extractive industries so they can more thoroughly
short form
timber and get the coal and the diamonds and the coal tannin.
Right. The short form is that we're much better at providing guns than we are at providing butter.
Yeah.
Even though both will kill you.
Yeah.
So
that's a big part of the NRA's work, making sure that no country of the global south can block their, you know, sinking guns into their communities. Real concretely, actually, how to respond to people who have been brainwashed. I think there's a degree of sympathy that we can try to keep in mind, as frustrating as it can be, to try to speak rationally with people who Savage and Limbaugh have gotten to. You know, keep in mind also that I think these people are very much connected with, you know, intelligence agencies or people who used to work for them and now have gone into the private sector to work on how to, you know, manufacture consent, that kind of thing. But I think keep in mind whatever we do, if we do something, even if it seems like it doesn't work, there's a quote from Oliver Wendell Holmes that I like. He said, one's mind, once stretched by a new idea, never goes back to its original dimensions. So we can always, you know, we're not going to get people to turn around and say, you know, you're right, I've been eating a crap sandwich for the past decade. What else should I read? You know, that's too much, too big a shift. But something, we can drop something in their minds. And to reach a lot of those unconverted people, that's another way I found Amazon so useful. I wrote a review of Michael Medved's The 10 Big Lies About America. And I've gotten a lot of response, including from somebody who really, really disagreed with me. And we got to have a big debate about that. And so...
Bless you for your patience. Honest to Pete, bless you for your patience, Preston, because I don't have that in me anymore. I will carry on. I will gladly carry on a discussion with any right winger who wants to, you know, come on this program and engage in a legitimate dialogue. But having seen how things dive, just sort of sink into the muck, especially on internet related stuff, we can't do it anymore. No,
I understand. You know, although sometimes people have extended patience to me from unlikely sources. I've been calling into some right-wing radio stations for years. And, kind of to my surprise, I can still get through. Not so much the national programs, but although some of them as well. But local ones pretty consistently. You know, I began to say a while back when we first started talking about this, I wonder what kind of calls Rick Roberts received. I've noticed some of these guys have been taking fewer calls, and I think that's because they're getting many, many more calls of dissent these days, kind of just upsetting their skits. And, I hear it on Hannity's shows. I hear it in his responses, and... I hear it in other calls to...
Sort of the stridency that his voice takes on?
Yep. There's fear. A lot of that stridency, I think, it's grounded in its fear. You know, the dying bull kicks the hardest. And, they're losing. They're losing a lot of control over the public mind. And, I hope there are enough people in the elite, among the elite, who are giving up the game as well. Like I said, even a person like Rupert Murdoch, I think he's more complex, and sometimes we tend to think of someone like that. I can't stand, you know, Fox News, all that stuff. Yet Fox Network does have a program like The Simpsons on, and I think that's been a very culturally progressive thing over the past several years.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, they just had a show like a week ago where The Simpsons, they sent a very clear message challenging Islamophobia. And so it's not all savage coming at us.
No, it's not. It's just there's a lot of that that needs to be cleaned out and cleared out. And more than anything else, responded to with discussion and dialogue and debate, you know, 3Ds. All we can do is keep trying, you know, you doing what you're doing, the rest of us working in whatever way we possibly can, but they're not going to probably do something really nasty that ought not be done to Dylan Thomas. They're not going to go gently into that good night, because among other things, there's this language stuff, this framing that means so very much. I just called it up a headline from the Washington Post. And the headline is, Academic Elites Fill Obama's Roster. Subhead, Critics Worry About Insularity as Ivy League Graduates Crowd Cabinet Posts. Now, to be fair, I worry about Ivy Leaguers mainly because
I think the bloom is somewhat off the rose after having an Ivy Leaguer like George Bush in office for 8 years. I think even the brick and mortar itself is screaming in New Haven, Connecticut, and Cambridge, Massachusetts. But all that aside, academic elites. And sure, there it is, the same right-wing frame that we had to face during the election cycle. That's elitist saying that people cling to gods and God and guns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's not elitist. It's reflection of fact. I mean, go anywhere in Appalachia or the South that you want to go, and people have really, really special relation to. There are people in the South and Appalachia and through the Midwest, and you know, even some of the tougher gun law states that probably have better relationships with their firearms than they have with other human beings.
Yeah.
And what do you call that but clinging?
Yep, it's become a fetish big time. And of course, I have no problem with people owning guns and hunting and all that. I think Hunters and Shooters is a great organization.
Yeah, response to the NRA.
Yep.
Yeah, good organization.
Yep.
And I'm guessing that as between the two, and this is pure speculation on my part, so guilty, I plead. I'm guessing that the guy who blew away his 3-year-old son a couple of Saturdays ago in Beckley, West Virginia, if you asked me to bet on something, I'd say that he was much more likely to have an NRA sticker in his truck window than he was a Hunters and Shooters sticker.
Definitely.
Because again, it's the fetishization of firearms. My God, can you imagine pointing a 12-gauge shotgun at a 3-year-old and say, "I'm going to get you"? And I mean, I'm a gun owner, okay? I am. And every firearm, whether loaded or not, is treated as such. There's just no other way to treat a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this guy was getting drunked up watching the football game or what. But I can't fathom the mindset that does that.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of framing things, the gun issue is something that needs reframing. It's always put in terms of, you know, control, what laws might be passed, so on and so forth. But, you know, beyond gun control, there's an issue of gun promotion, which is massive. You know, what they're doing, the gun industry is so much, it's product placement. Remember how they used to, like, have actors and actresses smoking cigarettes all the time?
Sure.
Okay, and that got a ton of people to take up smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, well, didn't Ronald Reagan hustle Chesterfields for a while?
Yeah. And, the same thing is going on with guns on a massive scale. I mean, to have, you know, hunky men like, you know, Kiefer Sutherland, Jack Bauer, and he's holding the gun up against his scrubbly, handsome face. And I noticed they had a push to get more women buying guns. And sure enough, I saw this image. I didn't even see the movie, but I kept seeing this image of Angelina Jolie with a gun strapped around her thigh.
Oh, what was the Tomb Raider or the, I don't know.
I'm thinking of the one she did with Brad Pitt.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really disappointing. I would not at all be surprised if some gun industry money got into somebody's hands.
Hey, look, a Coca-Cola actor does not show up on the big screen that has not been paid for in the movie.
Yeah. And both of them, Angelina and Brad Pitt, other than that, they do some good work.
They do very good liberal stuff. You know, what Brad Pitt's trying to accomplish in New Orleans is laudable in the extreme. And, you know, the guy came out and said, at 44, 45 years old, I'm not thinking of myself as an actor anymore.
Great. He narrated, he and Morgan Freeman alternate narrating these videos from PBS called E Squared, you know, E and then 2.
Yeah.
And then they've done about 4 or 5 of them. One's on transportation, one's on energy, one's on design. Just totally cutting-edge stuff, not just theories, although there's some of that, but concrete examples of sustainability projects and renewable energy and green architecture.
Oh, Lord, wouldn't we love to get them down into the Coal River Valley and let them see the Coal River Wind Project?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know if you caught the last couple of shows or not. Well, maybe Friday. But we had a press conference today, Preston.
Oh, how'd that go?
It was marvelous. There was a press conference in Beckley and a press conference in Charleston. I was able to attend the one in Beckley. And we had folks from Downstream Strategies, of an environmental consulting firm of Morgantown, West Virginia, who came down and described the findings in their new report that examines the economic realities of mountaintop removal versus developing wind energy on top of undestroyed mountains. And the folks there at Coal River Mountain Watch put together a beautiful, beautiful, just very visceral visual display. They had, you know, the big checks they give away in golf tournaments?
Right.
Yeah, they come, a thousand times normal size. They had two of those big checks there. And one was a check to the Raleigh County Commission from Massey Energy for $36,000, whereas the other was a check to the Raleigh County Commission from the wind energy company for $1,700,000 and change. And those are proven, real, honest-to-goodness numbers for what tax revenues would be to Raleigh County as between doing mountaintop removal on Coal River Mountain versus putting windmills on top of Coal River Mountain.
What a great visual.
What a great frame, you know?
Yeah.
And to have that visual going, too, just amazing, amazing. And repeated the message again in Charleston, and just sort of keep an eye on the inner tubes for the next couple of days, because I have a feeling that this will really take off, because there's going to be significant pressure brought to bear on the governor of this state to do the right thing. But we also recognize that in this, and that's why it would be great to have somebody like this program come down and examine this project. Because we are working decidedly uphill on something that is damn near vertical, because on the same day that we had these press conferences, the Coal River Mountain Watch folks and Downstream Strategies, on the same day that these press conferences took place, my congressman proudly announced that he's bringing 300 good jobs to McDowell County, West Virginia, to make liquid coal out of what little bit of clean water that county has left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And also, if I understand correctly, another member of our Democratic congressional delegation, a gentleman by the name of Alan Mollahan, proudly announced that has signaled that he is working on legislation that will ban windmill construction in West Virginia.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, talk about money changing hands. But, hopefully the wind people and the solar people and the green architecture people will start throwing some money around, and progressives working on their own public relations skills. I mean, it can be such an evil industry in so many ways, and the roots of it are so, ugly. And it's dominated. I mean, there are more PR agents than there are journalists now in this country. And
yep.
It's mostly, people working for the...
And that's one of the things that really impresses me about Coal River Mountain Watch and the other organizations working for environmental and community justice in this state, is that we're catching on. We haven't gotten there completely yet, but events like today show that we are very decidedly catching on to the need for super focused, super effective communications.
Yeah, and don't hesitate to drop a line to the E-squared people. I just kind of punched up. I tried to find them on the internet, and I didn't. But I've got a couple of their DVDs, and maybe drop a line to their producer, or you never know, or he may or she may forward it to somebody who can direct you to projects that are looking for these kinds of stories. Trying to think offhand, Plenty Magazine, that's an environmental mm-hmm. magazine. They're always looking for good.
Well, we were the issue and the crisis we're facing was even featured on the BBC News last night.
And no kidding.
Yeah, I heard about it yesterday evening from David in Tennessee, and then by the time this morning rolled around, our listener Dennis had already sent me a link to the package, the feature from BBC's World News that ran on TV last night and was already up on YouTube.
Wow. Do you know if any of the NBC and Katie Couric type programs, if they've given this any?
CNN has been down in the Coal River Valley to talk about this. I'm not sure about the big three mainstream media outlets. I hesitate to say because I don't want to be wrong, but I don't recall hearing their names anytime recently. But Lordy, the German TV, Norwegian TV, Danish TV, TV from literally all over the globe has been there to see the brilliance of this idea. And thus far, and this is the amazing part, the only people who think this isn't a good idea are either blinkered and blindered and in the immediate pay of the coal companies, are the coal companies themselves, or are the politicians who are directly beholden to those coal companies. Those are the only people who think it's a bad idea. And those are the people who are holding the rest of the people who have the good, forward-thinking, green-oriented, build the new economy ideas. We're being held hostage, if you can imagine. I don't know any other way to describe it but that.
Shifting gears a little bit, but connected. Another challenge of doing progressive work, on top of running into people who've just been so misinformed and have had all these reactionary attitudes built into them, there's trying to connect with fellow progressive people and just kind of not getting anywhere, just connections not being made or responses not occurring. I actually sent an email to a group called the Black Mesa Water Coalition.
Yes.
And, okay, you know them, I don't know.
Yes.
They're working on very similar projects, and looking at their website right now, Navajo and Hopi communities under threat for more coal mining on Black Mesa, Arizona.
And we have made the Coal River and associated groups in West Virginia have made very strong and positive statements in solidarity with the folks who are waging that battle with regard to the Black Mesa devastation.
Yeah. Well, my email to them was basically Coal River Mountain Watch is working on similar issues and similar solutions. And also, if you want to get your voice out there, here's a link to Head On Radio Network.
Oh, wow.
My hope is always they'll write back and say,
hey, yeah, wonderful.
Right.
Exactly.
But,
and, that's part of all these grassroots efforts consume vast amounts of human energy and human time.
Yeah. I mean, people get overwhelmed with their emails, and they get all this spam coming at them as well, which is gumming up the works. But
by the same token, you're helping them directly by talking about it here and by making it available, intellectually available to people who can then go and do their own work, make contact, and talk. It really is, it's that tell two friends who tell two friends who tell two friends, and the next thing you know, you've got real momentum behind you. So, even if they don't know organizations like the Black Mesa folks, even if they don't necessarily know we exist, we can take pride in the fact that they don't have to know we exist for us to be able to help.
There you go. Yep.
If we subsume, at least from my standpoint here, if I subsume a little bit of ego in understanding that no one has to say, well, they did it, or no one has to specifically put their name on an effort, that the effort is worth making in the name of humanity and, frankly, in the name of this country.
Yeah. And speaking of ego, I feel egocentric sometimes when I talk about, my activism in particular. But this is what I know.
Yeah. No. That wasn't what I was getting at all.
I understand. I was just kind of going on a different tangent regarding ego stuff. That can be such a barrier. We can be kind of hesitant to talk about our own stuff because
Look,
the egomaniac thing gets thrown around.
Well, that's a real problem for me, Preston, because I guess in the highfalutin, high-dollar world of big-time terrestrial the right-wing talk radio and so forth, you have to be an absolutely certifiable DSM-4 manual the egomaniac to succeed. And then, you know, that's why Flimball is on the air hollering, "Oh, whipping liberals with one half my brain tied behind my back," or "talent on loan from God."
Right.
You have to do that to prop up the fact that you're engaged in some really, really nasty business.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want it, you know, I hope there's not people in there, "Oh, I hate that darn thing and not old friend Kincaid. I hate him, I tell you." Yeah, I don't want anybody to do that. I suppose there are, and I suppose the bigger this program grows, the greater the likelihood will be that there will be more of those. But that's not my goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my only goal is to have an honest debate and an honest discussion and an honest dialogue about issues that really, really matter in this country. One of the things that I've tried to do, some consciously and some unconsciously, Preston, is to pull back a little bit from, you know, just beating on George W. Bush. Good God, it's easy. That's as the saying goes, that's the low hanging fruit.
Right.
If we take other issues, and focus the spotlight on them, then maybe, you know, people have a for ill. And I say that across the board. For ill, people have an emotional investment in the personalities involved in our political process.
Mm-hmm.
And the term of art is a cult of personality.
Yeah.
And you can't get through to somebody that you might be able to have that meaningful dialogue with that I know that you're out there looking for. If the first thing you do is put a shot right across their bow and through their, you know, jib.
Yeah, to attack those figureheads. And then also, you know, if you do something like, you know, anyone who voted for them's an idiot. I mean.
Okay, I've done that.
Okay, but it can be hard. I've done it too, you know, and I'm constantly kind of, you know, reviewing things I said and trying to think of better approaches, you know. So again, it's a daily practice, and plenty of mistakes are going to be made, but you know that we're out there contributing whatever we can in whatever flawed way we can, I think is the main thing. And to get back on something else, remember I can't open that Frank and Angel.
I meant to tell you not to do too much inside baseball on this, but all you need to do is download Adobe Reader.
You know, I had done that, and I still wasn't quite getting there. But she sent me another version, and it opened up right away, no problem.
Ah.
And I thought it was wonderful what she did.
Isn't it? It's beautiful. And you know, I've said that that's one of the best photographs I've ever seen of me. When these things start getting around, everybody else will understand the inside joke there. It's a silhouette. It's not anybody.
Right, right, right. And, I look forward to receiving some hard copies of that to pass around. And, you know, so your audience knows, just a promotional flyer that a listener of yours in Arkansas created something for the Head On Radio Network and did a really good job with it. So just to, you know, build this community.
Exactly. Exactly. And ultimately, you know, we want that to happen. That's why I've been trying to be very responsible lately, Preston, about mentioning the fact that we've got a Facebook presence and a MySpace presence. I might need a little input from Nick because I don't have it right to hand. He's been working on this a lot. I think it's Facebook or MySpace.com/conversationradio. So anybody who's out there who Facebooks, you know, and we're working on functionalities, applications to go in it, hopefully a little embeddable streaming device that'll let people just, it'll start streaming the show when you when you open up the Facebook page, and maybe direct links to the podcasting and things like that, because I want so many more people to participate in this discussion. I've lost. I don't want to say that I have lost something from how we began all of this, but I sense in my own self to a certain extent a philosophical change, insofar as I really want us to connect with people we would not otherwise expect to connect with. And, yeah. You know, until such point as they start spouting the business about until they start doing the typical right-wing name-calling that they have learned how to do over the past 30 years from Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and that crowd, we can have discussions, or we can at least try.
Yeah, I just read an example of that. I was at the post office a couple hours ago, got the most recent issue of the Progressive magazine, and inside of it is an interview with Maude Barlow, who's that wonderful Canadian activist that I admire so much, and she's talking about the water issue. And at one level, it's kind of below the radar, you know. It's not being spoken about a lot on the media, but on the other hand, it's kind of a big issue because there's so much grassroots activism going on around it.
Well, isn't there a brilliant documentary either out or coming out about water itself?
Yeah, it's just coming out, called Flow.
That's it. That's the one. I saw a trailer, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it was actually the documentary on, I belong to this DVD club called the Earth Cinema Circle, and it was one of the features that they presented.
Well, it looked very powerful and very moving, and in watching that trailer, I couldn't help but, because this is the way my strange little mind works, whenever you criticize something like mountaintop removal, immediately one of their defenders will come along and say, well, you just tried using your computer without coal-fired electricity. Coal keeps the lights on.
Yeah.
And we have to do, you know, because, you know, one day you'll flip the switch and there just won't be any electricity because the liberals have stopped the mountaintop removal. Well, mountaintop removal accounts for about 15% of all the coal, but 40% of the coal that comes out of Appalachia. So, you know, there's that. But we can have that discussion, you know, or we can tolerate that frame. Well, if we don't blow up the mountains, you're going to turn your light on one of these days and lights ain't going to come on.
Yeah.
But by the same token, we can't have a discussion where we say that one of these days, because of things like that and coal liquefaction and the burial of Appalachian streams and what's going on in places like Black Mesa and what's going on in Canada with the tar sands, that one of these days you're going to go to the tap and you're going to turn it on and there ain't going to be nothing there.
Right.
Now, we can't have that discussion.
Yep. That's another one of those common kind of thought traps that they throw out to us and try to, you know, demoralize us. You know, if we say something about an oil company, well, you have a car, don't you? Yes, we do. Don't have the, you know, but.
Oh, I recently got criticized for being a smoker because I criticized mountaintop removal.
Right. So constant. So they're very nuanced, and you got to stop and think through. Well, you know, we'd like to have more options. We'd like to have more fuel efficient cars. You know, so on and so forth. Yeah, I mean, there are going to be these paradoxes in life. We would rather have electric cars. Or
yeah, and that's the thing. The other side, Preston, has a whole lot of fallback positions. You know, they're like, it's like World War I trench warfare to them. Okay, we got run out of this trench. We got another trench right behind it.
Right.
So
info war.
Right. So if you say to the oil industry, well, you know, we want electric cars, then the coal industry's there in the next trench back while the oil industry's leaping over that trench. They're in the next trench back saying, oh, you want electric cars? Well, what do you think's going to provide the electricity for that electric car of yours if it ain't mountaintop removal coal?
Right. Well, think of something.
Yeah, when, you know, the wind blows morning, noon, and night, doesn't it? Yeah, because that's the other, you know, that's the big goon on solar. Well, what are you going to do with the half a day when the sun ain't a shining, smart boy?
Right. Well, that's when it's so helpful to know of solutions like Google. Their headquarters in California, they have electric cars. They're plug-in hybrids, and they park them under a carport that has solar panels.
It's a solar collector. I know. It's beautiful. Yeah, but then they fire them batteries up, and they can only drive it at night because they got to have it parked in the daytime with the sun to be shining on the panels. Oh, you know, if I wanted to sell out to the dark side, Preston, I'm telling you, it could be big. Oh, but God, they'd never have me. Not that I want them. But all of that is there, and they work on this stuff, and that's the little thing that I've tried to get across to folks the day in and day out. You and me, we get tired at the end of the day, and we go to bed, and we sleep. But these industries, these corporations that have a vested interest in keeping some velvet and some, in fact, spiky steel handcuffs and manacles and chains on us, they never sleep. They've got teams that work around the clock, around the globe, coming up with ways to further terrorize, oh, there's that word, terrorize not just the American people, but people the world over. What, I ain't going to have electricity? You know, and then you stop it, but it's like what I mentioned a minute ago. You stop and you think for a second, Preston, and you go, holy crap, humanity has lived without electricity for how many thousands of years? But how many thousands of years has humanity lived without clean drinking water? One of these things is not like the other. One of these things does not belong. But what's going to happen when they turn your cable off? And, you know, there might be riot inside a few households that had to go without satellite or cable for a little while. But eventually they'd start talking, and then they'd notice these things covered in dust and maybe cobwebs in the corner of the room. And they'd pick them up, and they'd look at them, and they're funny because they fold open, and they got these hard backs on them. And damn, it's a book, and it's all full of words and ideas. And, you know, you can read it in the sunshine, and you can even read a book in the dim light of a little fire or the solar panel battery or what.
Yep.
But again, they're ahead of us. They're so far ahead of the curve on trying to take the teeth out of these ideas that it looks like straight road to them.
Yeah. Still, there's an intra-elite conflict going on. You know, there are those people who see the money in solar and all that stuff.
And that's part and parcel of what went down today. We're not asking anybody to save a community for the sake of the community. We're not asking anybody to save a mountain for the sake of the mountain. We're asking people to save a mountain for capitalism.
Right. Right.
Because there is a horse-gagging load of money to be had in the prospect. You know, the all the way down to the people who own the mountain. I know. You know, call the Native Americans, ask them about mountain owning. They can tell you a lot. But these people who own the surface of the mountain and lease the mineral rights to the likes of Massey Energy, when Massey's done in 10 or 15 years, there's going to be a barren moonscape there. It'll grow non-native grasses. It'll never grow a piece of ginseng or a slippery elm bark. It'll never grow anything healing. The molly moochers or the morel mushrooms will be gone. Most of the life will be gone from it, although it may be filled in with things that peck at seeds on dirt and such and so forth. But they're going to own that, and all the money's going to be gone out of it. Now, they've made some short-term money over the course of 10 or 15 years, but they'll never make another dime off of it again. Whereas the windmills, well, they just keep churning money into those landowners' pockets. Year after year after year after year after decade, centuries. It's possible. And I guess some of this is, didn't we talk about Hobbes and Locke a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, we did.
And some of this is within that framework because it appeals to the baser self-interests of ordinary persons. And which would you rather have, $1 million now or $30 million over the next 30 years. Assuming that the $1 million is a one-shot deal and the $30 million just goes on and on and on. Which, my self-interest says I'd like to have the sure thing, the stuff that's extended out into the future that can take care not only of me, but of my kids and my grandkids and generations yet unborn and undreamt of.
Mm-hmm.
And if you break into the corporate mindset of I got to have mine now, it's got to happen in the next quarter, it doesn't happen. You break that and you can start changing a lot of things in this country.
Yep. I want to mention quickly back to the Heritage Foundation.
Yes.
Their seed money came from the Coors family. So if people are drinking Coors beer, know that you're supporting a family that's very right wing.
Oh gosh, yes.
Again, the power we have as consumers, our consumer choices. Here at XL Energy, it used to be a public service company, but, it got privatized and all that stuff, and it's XL. But here, at least in our region, they have offered consumers a chance to pay like a couple extra dollars to support wind energy.
That just happened for us here in West Virginia as well.
Great.
Appalachian Power finally saw the handwriting on the wall, and I think, given all of the usage that we have here, I think $25 extra a month guarantees that we've bought into wind energy from a wind farm in Illinois because we can't have any here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. For a typical consumer here, we're paying maybe $3 or $4 extra dollars a month, and it's been very popular. People are paying a little bit more for the cause, so we're not as selfish as Rick Roberts wants us to be, ignoring everything outside our sphere, immediate spheres. Focus on the family, Dobson tells us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's amazing.
It is indeed. Well, Preston, it's awfully good hearing from you this evening, and what a wonderland of ideas you brought to the table. Thanks for thanks for taking us so many places.
My pleasure. And one other place Coal River Mountain Watch might want to connect with is bioneers.org. I don't know if you know their project, but each year they have activists and all kinds of scientists speak about their projects. And, Coal River sounds totally right up their alley of, the sort of information they present and who they promote and stuff like that. So, yeah, bioneers.org. You'll like it.
I will. I'll go and check it out. I just wrote it down. Preston, take care and good to hear from you.
Good night, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And I'll tell you what, we're kind of up on top of the third hour. So let's take a little bit of a break. I love the suggestions and requests that I get in with regard to the limited amount of music that we play. I mentioned poor little corporate America with its face pressed up against the window pane. And I got this suggestion. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice, and how true that is. No liberal voice, no listener support. This is all about what we choose to make it. And it's about the conversation that you choose to have. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on, on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. And we'll be back in a couple. I'm Bob.
We got dressed up and we went to a cafe. The new place on Low Highway 1. I handed my keys to the valet. Oh, brother tipped him and said, "Why, thank you, son." The hostess then showed us the way to our table, past patrons so well groomed and gay. As we took our places, I noticed three faces in the window looking our way. It was a young man, I would say 30. Spackles of gray in his hair. His clothes, though old, were not dirty. Two young ones clung to him there. In all of it all, that father stood tall, his children's eyes on the glow. The thought in each face read, "Is here's a place people like us cannot go." I saw three faces in the window, so tired, so humble, so plain. As I stared at the bounty around me, I could not help but feeling ashamed. The lights in that barroom were blazing. The light in your eyes was shining through. Two, with one heart we looked at those faces. So down on their luck, on the dark avenue. Now I have one more reason to hate you. My darling is love of my life. For I thought your heart would be breaking, but your words cut me worse than a knife.
Those beggars out there,
faces in the window, so tired, so humble, so plain. As I stared at the bounty around me, I could not help but feeling ashamed. Oh, I saw three faces in the window, so sweet, so hungry, so frail. As I glared at the bounty around me, I felt foolish, yes, guilty as well.
You're listening to Win Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As Congress ponders throwing the auto industry a financial lifeline, some in Congress want that lifeline to also be a hangman's noose around the neck of the UAW to destroy wage and benefits gains from decades of workers' struggles. The UAW may seek a seat on the GM board and a stake in the company in return for concessions. The White House and Congress, meanwhile, are reportedly close to a deal as House Democrats work on a draft of the bill that would grant emergency federal loans to the U.S. auto industry.
We just can't understand how that a bank that was given $25 billion for bailouts could not bail us out.
Chicago sit-down striker Lalo Munoz. UE workers are continuing their sit-down strike occupation of a Republic Windows factory in the Chicago area. The tactic won great success for the union movement in the 1930s, helping to spark a massive surge in industrial unionism. The Chicago sit-downers are protesting an illegal plant closing and demanding the money they are owed before they leave the plant. Melvin Macklin is one of the sit-downers and vice president of UE Local 1110.
We as workers here, we can't understand how that they were given all of this money to bail out and to help small businesses. And yet when we need help, they just refuse us help.
For those of you keeping track, there have been more than 40,000 layoffs at America's top 500 largest companies in the month of December. Jesse Russell reports.
Forbes has begun keeping track of the number of layoffs at America's 500 largest public companies. The total for December, as of Monday, December 8th, is 40,662. That total includes Dow Chemical's Monday announcement of cutting its workforce by 11%, or letting go of roughly 5,000 jobs. The company will also close 20 plants. Only 8 days into the month, overall layoffs for the month of December are averaging a little more than 5,000 cuts a day. Also announcing major job cuts on Monday was Belgium-owned InBev, who recently absorbed Anheuser-Busch. The company plans to reduce its U.S. workforce by 6%, or 1,400 jobs. 75% of those jobs are expected to come from St. Louis. When InBev absorbed Anheuser-Busch earlier this month, the company promised to keep the North American headquarters in St. Louis open and to not close any breweries. The St. Louis job cuts will come from salaried employees at the company's headquarters. Here's today's economic report. At least the economy is consistent. The U.S. job market experienced a slight decline in November, with employers cutting 533,000 jobs, the most in 34 years. November marked the 11th consecutive month of job losses. The Conference Board predicts that as the U.S. economy enters 2009, jobs will continue to be lost at a brisk pace. In the report, the organization's senior economist said as many as 3 million jobs will likely be lost by mid-2009.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Wow, you could make a whole three-hour program out of some of the topics raised in Labor Radio News there. I can't begin to describe, and this is the absolute truth. I cannot begin to describe the admiration that I have for those workers in Chicago.
as usual, mother leads the way. Labor is the mother of activism. And they're proving it once again. And the irony, of course, is not lost on me. We were praising Bank of America just last week, rightfully so, for getting out of the mountaintop removal business. And then they turn around and put the screws to some working people in Chicago. Forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. It's the bank. Banks aren't really... You didn't really expect them to take that bailout and try to do some good with it. Oh, they're saying now that, oh, okay, we'll loan Republic Window some stinking money. I mean, you know, money can't solve all your problems, but we'll loan them a little bit so maybe they can honor their obligations and screw those workers and give them a little severance pay and kick them to the curb. Just saw that the price of hummingbird tongues went up again. Damn. Only going to be eating them three times a day now. And what are you going to do? And then Budweiser. Now, I know there are members of our audience who don't drink. I know there are members of our audience who do not drink beer. Members of our audience who are the connoisseurs of wine. And then, you know, there's the folks who love nothing better than a classic cocktail. Some who like all of the above. I got over Budweiser years ago. When I realized that, I was a beer snob for a while. Made my own. Studied the styles. Everything from barley wine to the classic Dunkelweisse. And Weizen beers and the beautiful Belgian lambics. And, you know, there are probably far more beer styles than there are wine varieties, when you get right down to it. But wine, beer being working people's beverage in at least Northern Europe and America, doesn't get the respect that 1978 Louis Fouché with the dust on the bottle and the cork that's buried in a layer of wax and has that dank, funky smell at the bottom of our wine cellar, ma fée. I mean, it doesn't get that kind of, you don't read a lot of people describing the tantalizing bouquet of the beer was reminiscent of an old baseball glove. You know, the way they write about wine, if you can't tell, I'm a beer guy. But that began to change in this country years ago. And I was reminded of all this hearing the Labor Radio story, as well as hearing a comment that rolled in via email a couple of minutes ago referencing Preston's comments earlier. As we used to say out Oregon way, up yours, Coors. William Coors, the man that bought the Secretary of Interior for a fellow that fought hard to put McDonald's inside Yellowstone. Yeah, that's what Yellowstone needs, is a yellow clown, Yellowstone, whatever. But, see, there's a guy of roughly the same, maybe a year older than me, and his name is, I believe, August A. Bush IV. And this guy makes George W. Bush look like a choir boy. You know, you're forever hearing the right-wingers talking about, car wrecks and death and accidents and things that have befallen Democrats. Well, August A. Bush IV makes all of that just look like penny ante chump change. This guy was, he was a nightmare. And America's largest brewing concern was turned over to him. And he ran it into the ground. You know, there's only one consonant difference between Bush and Bush, that being C. And both of them had profoundly similar effects on everything they touched. George Bush, only guy who couldn't find oil in the Permian Basin. only guy who, you know, oh, it went on and on and on. You know, the Texas Rangers, Harkin Energy, Spectrum 7, the United States, the state of Texas, the United States government, everything he set his hand to turned to dust. And the same thing obtains with August A. Bush, the, I believe, fourth. Because he took a brewing giant that had taken the labor and devoted efforts of generations and destroyed it in, what, a decade and a half? A little more than that? 2 decades, maybe? So that InBev came in and was able to buy Budweiser, much to the howling and screaming of people who thought that Budweiser was the classic American beer, when in fact the beer recipe and beer style was largely lifted, not from Czech Budvar, but from something much more akin to, and this is no negative reflection because it's wonderful in its own right, the Sapporo, the Japanese beer, because of course the primary grain ingredient in most Budweiser beers is rice. It's rice beer, it just is. And no, this is not a disquisition on beers and beer styles and what's good and what's not, because those are entirely subjective. And I welcome your opinion that one should drink this, that, or the other thing, or not drink it at all. It neither picks my purse nor breaks my leg, as Thomas Jefferson said about religion. But there is a greater point here. At the time that the Bush playboy, this one with the C in his name, was driving that great American corporation straight into the dirt and grinding the gears and throwing rods all the way, there was something else happening in America. And it wasn't happening in corporate boardrooms. It was happening in garages, in basements, cellars, in kitchens around the country. It was fostered and nurtured by people like Jim Cook. And it was the great microbrew revolution. And suddenly, beer styles that had not been heard of in this country for literally generations, you know, since before Prohibition, were back in vogue. And people were talking knowledgeably about things like stouts, cream stouts, oatmeal stouts, porters, ales, lagers, doubles, triples, and lambics, and faro, and on and on and on. And out of that grew a profound change in the brewing industry in this country, where hops began to, you know, I used to say about Budweiser that the only thing about that the bottle of Budweiser that had anything to do with hops is that there was a little the stylized representation of a hop flower on the label, because you damn sure couldn't taste it in the beer. But suddenly there were pale ales and India pale ales that had dirty old bastard ale or what I forget what it was called, but the dead guy ale and all these things that were so profoundly hopped is like, oh, that's what those taste like. And all along, August A. Bush the Fourth cruises along, driving his company into the dirt. Until finally, like I said, to considerable hue and cry, Budweiser was purchased by InBev, which is in itself a corporate conglomeration of Brazilian and Belgian brewing companies. The folks that make InBev are the folks who make Stella Artois, among others. They also make a Brazilian beer with some of the funniest beer commercials. Never, no, Bob, don't get sucked into the commercials thing. But anyway, had Budweiser done it, and suddenly Budweiser is now out there with three new styles that are actually old styles, but not old styles like the brand that they sell in the ballpark, and you get the right. And let's see, one of them is an American ale. Another one is, and it's branded Budweiser, and there's another one that's a Michelob Pale Ale, and there's another one that's a Michelob Dunkelweisse, a dark wheat beer. And they are all in their own right magnificent, the flavors. And they're just now getting around to it. When this was sweeping the nation in 1995. And that's what corporate lockthink can do for you. You know, the union brewmasters at Anheuser-Busch did not cause Anheuser-Busch to be purchased by InBev. It was not the failure of the brewmasters. It was the failures that took place in the boardroom. And such is also the case, of course, with Detroit. The parallels are so close together as to be scary. The line workers at GM and Ford and Chrysler, the people working in that 100-degree heat, the people who are maimed and wounded and injured and sometimes killed on the assembly line, the generations who fought and bled for the right for them to have collective bargaining rights, they are not responsible. They are employees. They are workers. They are not owners. They are not managers. They do what they're told. They build what they're told to build. Because long ago, a culture was created in Detroit that said, we'll tell you what to do. Worker, you do it. And through much struggle, a degree of entente was reached whereby that was accomplished. But now, according to people like Richard Shelby and, John Ensign from Nevada, suddenly it's working people's fault. But it isn't, and we know it's not. Any more than it's the fault of the folks at Republic Window for the fact that the banks played footsie with phony baloney investment products and created the economic the nightmare that we're in right now. But all along the way, you will see more and more and more of this. Blame the worker. Blame the worker. Blame the worker. Ah, it's their pension. That pension's killing them. That pension's not killing anybody. That pension wasn't given. That pension was bought in sweat and exhaustion, in overtime when the line couldn't shut down. It was bought with human life. It was a trade. You pay me money, I'll give you some of my life, because that is the nature of the equation that working people enter into in this country every day. Work is noble. Work is ennobling. Work gives a sense of purpose to those who seek the purpose in it. But nothing is ever given. Least of all, health care in one's elderly years, in one's retirement, and the pension that one struggled when it might have been a hell of a lot easier not to pump it in there out of your own paycheck, but instead live life a little bit more lightly. You see, that's the way it is with a pension. You bust your ass and you take money out of your salary, you put it into a pension so that, not so you can live high on the hog in your retirement, but so that you may simply live in your retirement. And what percentage of the American people don't get it? Why don't the American people get it? Because all of that was taken away at the beginning with the Ronnie damn Ray gun and the phony baloneyizing of the classic traditional American pension. Until people don't understand what pensions are anymore. I don't know, has the right wing done it yet? If not, I expect any day now that the right wing blather bags like Rick Roberts and Michael Savage will start referring to pensions as some form of welfare. Would you be even the least bit surprised? Not me. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke.
Well, the one that gets to me is you hear all the time people like Med Ben them complaining, and I go, okay. Now, what is that group you belong to? Is it AFTRA or SAG, or which group is that?
Yeah, that'd be a union now, wouldn't it?
Out of them, do you? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, say, other pensions, they're all evil, but not mine.
Right, and lawyers, doctors, why, they have the most powerful unions in the world in the form of the ABA and the American Medical Association. Right.
Yes. They're going after pensions. It's like, say, yeah, let's get the Republicans start talking about getting rid of the lawyers and the doctors' pensions. Let's see y'all step on that third rail.
Yeah.
They'll show up with pitchforks and burning torches outside their offices.
Yeah, they will.
No, but you were talking about the thing a minute ago about about beers. Let me tell my one beer story.
Everybody has one.
I know. When I first started drinking, what I used to drink is signature beer from Stroh's.
Oh, my God.
That tells you how long ago that was. And they wiped it out. When they wiped it out, I said, no more beer for a while. And I mean, I've driven to Texarkana in the old days when we couldn't get beer, certain beers east of the Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. We got to do what they say can't be done.
We did do it in a Trans Am. Thank you. We would have. We could have. Let's put it that way. But yeah.
Oh, that was something special back then when you couldn't.
Well, that was an adventure when you were a young kid. When you were, 18, 19 years old. That was the adventure of life.
Yeah. Other people in the country. Other young people were trying things like marijuana or hallucinogens. The little redneck boys in the South just wanted a Coors.
Right, and Texarkana was our way to heaven.
Yep. That's exactly. You betcha.
I want to bring up something that I haven't heard anybody talk about today. I saw a couple stories on it. You saw this thing now where NBC's talking they're going to cut back their prime time.
No.
Yeah, they're talking like they're talking like right now, I think they said they do 22 hours, and they're talking about cutting it back.
Well, I did see where Viacom is taking it on the chin. And of course, don't they still own CBS?
Yeah. Well, and the thing, that's what part of this thing is, I think, with them, wanting now to, where they're pushing this thing with Leno. Wanting to put him on, apparently, to be the NBC's answer, I guess, to Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. Yeah. They're wanting to put him on in prime time.
Oh, dear Lord. I thought they announced that he was on the way out the door, Luke.
He was, but now all of a sudden they've decided, well, we're going to think about putting him on maybe at 10 in the evening. Even though they're still going to move Conan to the Tonight Show, is maybe putting Leno on at like 10 in the evening. Essentially, this is going to be, I guess, the new version of Dateline. NBC.
NBC shtick line, sure.
Well, it's one of those things. They love their little docudramas and all that because they don't cost them anything. You know what I mean? And development costs and all that, they don't cost them a thing. We're going to run Datelines from 10 years ago. No one will notice. We'll change the front of it.
That's so funny you should mention that because there's one of the great Kurt Vonnegut novels. The protagonist goes to work in a prison across the lake where the inmates, the prisons are run by the Japanese, and there are just endless loops of old documentaries and sitcoms and whatever, as long as it isn't anything current or anything in the present.
Well, it's like we were talking the other day, about the thing that, here they have an attack in India, and of course in MSNBC that weekend is showing lockup.
A
straight. It's like, guys, I'm sorry, you have
It's to a scared straight weekend on MSNBC, yeah.
But, it's just one of those things, you're just sitting there going, guys, I'm sorry, but, and the whole thing, you saw the thing about Tribune. Which most people don't recognize when you say Tribune, but just think of WGN.
WGN, right.
The Chicago Tribune and a few other things.
Yeah, they're on the way. They filed for bankruptcy, right?
Yeah, apparently their leader, Mr. Zell, is apparently he's taking it on the chin too. They're ripping him up one side and down the other.
And, well, let's see, the Miami Herald is said to be on the auction block.
And McClatchy's put that up, and apparently...
Rocky Mountain News is gone.
Yeah, and is it the Times now has borrowed money against their building or something? They're talking about something, but they got a loan. I guess the collateral on it is the Times building. It's like, you know, most people think that, you know, the
Oh, I can't wait to
affect people. Well, here's a group it's affecting.
And this is after they got, you know, the collective for-profit only media got a humongous infusion of cash, $5 and $10 at a time, out of working people's pockets in the form of the last political campaign. You'd think that would carry them somewhere.
Well, apparently, if I say you're starting to wonder where they spend the money, because apparently, like I was telling, starting with on NBC, apparently NBC's now announcing that. Two or three shows that they said were coming back next year apparently aren't coming back next year.
Well, can't you just see the repo guy walking into Maureen Dowd's office at the New York Times and saying, "Lady, put down the hummingbird tongue and step away from the pate. This is a repo."
That would almost be worth it. Oh God, you know, like I say that thing with last week with Gene Lyons.
Yeah.
We wrote that thing about her. It's like, yeah, that's just perfect.
Well, you know, I stick with Bart Kopp on that one, Luke. You know, she hates everybody. She is the dragon lady.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, darling, you got to like somebody. I mean, what is this? It's like, I mean, do you want to be, she apparently wants to be, I guess, this generation's head of Hopper or what? You know?
I don't know. But she's just, this. She's got this really, I mean, there's Clinton derangement syndrome out there, but she's got it to a terminal degree, I think.
Well, like I say, I still think though you still have to follow Matthews on that.
Yeah, well,
Matthews, I honestly think it's a sexual obsession. I mean, when he's talking about
don't take me there.
I know, but you know what I mean. When you listen to him talk about it, you just wonder if after the show they come out and they throw a couple of buckets of cold water on him every time. It's like, Chris, come out of it.
Yeah, Granny comes after him with the hot water bucket and the hose and the rake.
God, I mean, you know, because sometimes he gets into it, and you're just like waiting for him to come out with either that or come out with the CO2 extinguishers.
And smiling David Gregory is going to be the permanent host of Meet the Press, Toots.
Oh God. Oh yes, the man who most people seem to forget that thing where he admitted that every day I make sure I listen to Rush Limbaugh in the afternoons.
Well, but so does Brian Williams, and yeah, I maybe it's in the contract. No, what I'll never forget nor forgive him for is standing up there yucking it up with MC Rose.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like, oh.
I mean, could that have been any more embarrassing or overt? It couldn't have had they done it in blackface. Honest to God, it couldn't have, Luke.
I mean, you're just sitting there wondering, it's like, couldn't they got somebody from Fox News to come up and do this? Why do I have to?
Because David Gregory wanted the access.
Something slightly funny, I think. Did you see yesterday, I think it was, the unveiling of George's, W's portrait?
Yeah, welcome to my hanging.
did you see the portrait? It looks more like Daddy than it does him.
Well, it looks like they used a cardboard cutout for everything but the chin up.
Well, the thing of it is, if you look at it from one side, it looks sort of a little bit like somebody was trying to channel Reagan, too.
What, and he's standing. You remember that stiff pose he struck in China when he tried to leave through the closet?
Yeah.
He turned to the camera and got all stiff. Well, that's the way that portrait is, and he's got his like fingertips touching a table as if to take table. This is a table. Pathetic.
I saw the portrait. I just said, what was the table? What was the guy painting it drinking? I mean, or what was George drinking?
Look, you know, I don't care if you're Van Gogh or Rembrandt. You got to work with your subject matter. you can do a still life, but you can't turn a rotten tomato into a banana.
Well, it's sort of like at least they probably had Daddy stand in. At least do a good picture of Daddy made it look better. You know, it's this thing, you know, now where apparently. I think Overman had it tonight, so we probably can check the site later. Where apparently now the NBC's also been getting the talking points about how to redirect, you know, how to do the revisionist history on George W.'s legacy, which is going to be the most let's put it this way, I wouldn't eat any time before I look at some of this stuff.
Oh, and yeah, the memo has gone out. It's all from here to January 20th. It's all home on the range. You know, never is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not bushy all day.
Well, you notice that when they announced the fact about him buying the house down in Dallas, no one said, "Aren't you going to be out cutting any brush?"
No, he's got a few thousand acres that abuts the property to cut brush on. But you know, my favorite part about the property transfer was the fact that only a relatively few years ago did that stop being one of those properties that you know you couldn't sell to those people.
Yeah, he was in one of those areas where, sorry, you can't ever sell it to anybody a little south of the
But why should we be surprised? Because Antonin Scalia had property that had those same covenants in it when he signed the damn deed on it.
You know, well, like I say, it's that wonderful stuff that our mainstream media seems to forget to tell people. You know, it's like, where is this, Mr. Gregory? Why weren't you leading with a story on the evening news one night? You know, where was the story about the fact that George Bush buys into a, a restricted community?
Yes, a covenantally restricted community.
You know, it's like we always said, it's not the news they tell you, it's the news they forget to tell you, or should we say, don't bother telling you. That's the more important news.
Yeah, the silence is between the notes. Right.
It's one of the things you got to pay attention to them things. Oh, did you like the thing where apparently now we can now have gun smoke up on top of old Smokey? Where George W. is making now where you can take your firearms into the...
Oh, God.
Thing.
Yeah, I know.
And we said it's time
gunfight at Dollywood, details at 11.
You know, there is a place over in Maggie Valley called Ghost Town in the Sky. We may be able to make that a truism.
Yeah, shoot the tumbleweeds as they roll.
Oh God, I tell you what, some of the stuff is you're just kind of just looking at going no. Oh, and
but you know what do you want from an administration that previously said, you know what America needs? America needs more coal-fired power plants on the verges of our national parks. That's what America needs.
But no, you were talking earlier about the Carzar. Just always remember, anytime anybody wants to think that, you know, what, how bad can it be, always pull out, go somewhere, go down to your corner Blockbuster or whatever your corner video store is, and get out that, and go rent that little thing called Who Killed the Electric Car.
Yep.
And it will tell you about a few facts that no one ever seems to want to bring up. The fact that, out in California, one of the ways they killed the electric car was the Bush administration made them change the law. The law that said originally, you know, they had to have like 5% of their cars had to be zero emissions cars. They said, well, we'll just kill that law. That law doesn't count anymore. We wiped that one out when they came in. And then, like I say, always remember that when you say about the people at GM, these are the same people, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, that the month after they killed the EV1 project, electric cars, they bought some company called Hummer.
How's about that?
Wasn't that just an amazing coincidence?
Yeah, the four-wheeled penis extension. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much tremendous a lack of foresight in Detroit's management because they themselves...
The DVD and watched the commercial that GM made. I've never seen a commercial that was designed to scare you from buying something.
Oh, I know. I know. And but the thing that really blows my mind is that they made this assumption all on their own that all electric cars had to be unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
All electric cars had to be small and cramped rather than investing in the technology that would have allowed them to make, you know, great big honking cars.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. Just if you go rent that movie, anybody that does, just always think about this fact that California and probably more parts of the country, because at the time, I think it was Arizona and New York were looking into getting into it too. We could have been 10 years ahead in this. You know, because like I say, the first couple versions, you know, they had to change the batteries and all that, where they're up now to the lithium ion batteries and all that, you know. And it was progressing. And just imagine, we'd be 10 years further along now.
Look what the Tesla people did, Luke.
Oh.
I mean, if that doesn't speak to your inner hot rodder, nothing will.
And the thing is, that was the first one. Apparently, they've got two other versions coming up that are more family cars, more than the Roadster.
If we can just keep Congress from killing it, I know. Hey, Luke, I've stacked up for some reason or another. All right here at the end of the program.
Oh, that's okay, but I'll see you sometime down the road.
All right, take care, Luke. Good hearing from you. Bye now. That's Luke in East Tennessee, and we'll roll on now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Bob. It's David in the middle.
Ah, well, okay. It's the Tennessee connection again.
It's, you know, he Luke comes on, and gee whiz, I'm just on the phone. First of all, a small aside as far as this George Bush the Younger portrait. Think Dorian Gray. He looks worse than his old man right now.
True.
I mean, day to day, stack up, you know, that, oh, gosh.
Well, that kind of happens to old drunks, doesn't it?
Well, it happens to old evil drunks. You know, Churchill looked fine up until the day he just decided he didn't want to bother. But, you know, look at George. Evil, evil hurts. All right, this is a history lesson. And I know history lessons are a lot like home movies. So I'm going to try really, really hard to keep this short and relatively short and to the point. So there's a key phrase here. The key phrase is, ha, ha, we screwed them. Hang on to that. Ha, ha, we screwed them.
Okay.
Where were you in December of 1968?
One shaking packages at the age of five under an artificial Christmas tree.
I was a very young, aggressive, 24-year-old shop steward in a union manufacturing company that had been tapped by the International as somebody that might matter 6-7 years down the road because I had a mouth and I had a brain and I was at the time quite eager to push back where I saw management doing things that really weren't the best things to do. So way above my pay grade at the time, the International Union that I was a small, tiny member of and an elected official on a shop, you know, with 15 men that looked for me to guidance in their department. Once a month, I got old-fashioned mimeographed sheet. You know the stuff. They smell funny when you get them out of the envelope and the lettering is purple. That's the way copies were made in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from the International Paper Makers and Paper Workers Union, and it was to be reading matter so that down the road, when young guys that were going to be brought up through that system knew how to call chapter and verse on what was going on. If you go to the Wall Street Journal in 67, 68, 69, 70, 80, 70, 71, you will find articles where the big three labor negotiators barely disguised their laughter that they got the United Auto Workers to accept fringe benefits, health care, and pensions that were 30 years down the road so that those workers would not use the power they had to force higher dollar labor rates at that time. Honest to God, they laughed, and they in effect said, ha, ha, we screwed them. We at Ford, we at Chrysler, we at GM, because you dumb SOBs out there jerking those, you know, stuffing those washers and swinging those wrenches, we're going to pay you less now so that we can make more. And you, because you're so stupid, you'll die when you're 65. We just sold you pie in the sky, chump.
Oh, my God.
I haven't heard anybody on either side or any of the facets of this argument remind America of what those smart-ass guys in the
nifty suits at the time thought they had done to the American worker. And the American worker said, wait a second, you know, if I'm not so bad off, when I mean, a big-ass Social Security check for somebody that just retired in 1968 was $118. My father got one of them. And they wanted more than $118. So they said, gee whiz, you know, if I retire and I've got health care and a little bit better pension, Margaret and I can, you know, we'll have a little bit nicer time on the weekend when we invite the grandkids by. And Detroit laughed about it. Now then, these lying sons of bitches, as you love to say, self-made, are telling the world that we screwed them. Please kiss my bloody ass.
Wow. You're right. I haven't heard mention of that anywhere along the line. But that's
anybody to research it in any way you want. I'll stand up to the test.
Bless my soul.
We, in those wonderful little trifold sheets with stamps on them from our international, we were told we have this, and the other side in a major union feels they've screwed us. And then within the international papermakers and paper workers that I was a part of, there was a discussion. Do we fight harder for money now, or do we follow the lead of our really big brothers? Because I'm sorry, in the late 60s, if you were a union member, you looked at the Teamsters, you looked at the UMW, and you looked at the UAW. You wanted to see what the really big-shouldered guys were doing. Because if you were just a guy working in paper, you weren't quite as much as a miner or an auto worker or a Teamster. And you knew to follow lead. Oh, my gosh, they did that. Is that right for us? What should we do? And I had these little things about, you know, read this and know what's going to come up in years to come. The big three thought they had screwed the worker out of something for that day back then. And now then, the decision they thought was so good for them, they're blaming on people that work, people like I was at that time. So I'd love to hear more about that from some of this so-called journalistic world that ain't doing squat.
Well, they're doing something. It's just not journalism.
Yeah, it's squat.
Turtle squirt.
Yeah, well, that too.
Well, that's the I heard the line on The Simpsons once. It's a hell of a place to learn labor history. The machine of capitalism is oiled with the blood of the workers, and that's that.
Well, you know, even within the last 24 hours, Rove has reminded everybody that if you control the past, control the future. So talk about revision. Good Lord.
And this ensign creep from Nevada has said that he won't, you know, well, the hotel industry, he doesn't want anything good. He doesn't want anything to happen for Detroit. Doesn't care about those 3 million workers. But he said, well, but, you know, I wouldn't rule out asking for a bailout for Las Vegas. The hotel and entertainment business is taking a big beating. And I read that, and the first thing I thought of, David, was that that marvelous opening scene in The Godfather Part Two, where the senator from Nevada has that little heart-to-heart with Michael Corleone.
Oh, yeah.
And you said, you know, and on the one hand, he stood out there, and he's been this smiling, you know, oh, gosh, we love them Corleones. And then he comes in to do business, and he's worse than any Corleone would ever dream of being, because among other things, he's dishonorable. And that for people for whom that matters, you know, the flag waving types and the America's better than ever. That's what we're dealing with here when we're talking about just screwing everybody who works in Detroit. And I mean everybody who works in Detroit or in the so-called Rust Belt, you know, where there are still communities that are fueled by auto factories. That's dishonorable, David.
look.
Set the economics aside. Set everything else aside. From a purely American standpoint, it's dishonorable.
It's so very apparent. If drug dealers and criminals had the ethics of politicians, they'd be killed before the cannolis could be passed around.
You know, that's one to write down. Killed
really?
Killed before the cannolis cooled.
Okay, well, you know, that's one of my favorite things.
I really would love to see some real live investigation done of this. And some historical perspective. Because that's what we're found wanting. Again, you know, you were that up and comer shop steward. Well, I was rattling packages under the phony Christmas tree. And that is the benefit of age.
Go to an old fashioned union hall where they were truly participatory. Go to a UAW hall right now. Find a guy that's 65 and still has his wits about him. And ask him if the company didn't laugh at the UAW for taking benefits forever versus 45 cents an hour then.
Well, you've heard Brother Ed call in. Brother Ed was UAW.
Well, I guarantee you, this will ring a bell. I fully expect that it will, because literally, I was there. In this one particular case, Bob, I got the memo.
inside or outside of the box, David?
Oh, wherever. You know, just let it go where it may. Well, take another call and then wrap it up. You know, I've done what I can do. Chaos rules supreme. My work here is done. I got to go now.
All right, take care. Bye now. And let's see, if you guys are all actually callers, I will come to you in Siri. Okay, you're not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I won't be long.
No hurry.
He was talking about blaming the workers and blaming the unions and all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Pat Robertson said it's all those $70 hour workers.
I saw that and about put my foot through the screen. I did,
yeah.
Juanita.
And
he's been saying it like every day for 2 weeks, hasn't he?
I don't know. I just heard the one time. I didn't hear him. I just read about it. And I just think about, you know, how much influence that he has on people and all those Rubal people that talk shows. And you know that one guy you said was Roberts?
Yeah, Rick Roberts filling in for Michael Savage.
Didn't he sound like that other guy that is so holy and righteous?
Well, they all kind of run together for me. What are you talking about, one of
his voice sounded. I thought that's who it was.
Oh, yeah, well, that's that phony announcer voice.
Well, I know that one time when Randy Rhoads was on CNN,
mm-hmm.
and she wasn't at the studio, and she said every time she was on, there'd be like two or three right-wingers. Yeager, is that name Yeager?
Dennis
Yeager.
Oh, Dennis Prager. Yeah.
Yeah, that's who that Rick sounded like to me. And she said that they didn't know that her mic was open and she could hear what they were saying, and he was the leader of it. You know, they were going to gang up on her. He was mocking her and everything.
Not surprising in the least.
But he is really a jerk.
Yeah.
In my opinion. But, they have such influence on people. And I'll tell you something else now, compared like so-called salaries, you know, they've done that to people on welfare also. They'll say, like, Stossel on 2020.
Oh, he's another one.
Oh, yeah. And he said, oh, they make, what is it? They get, 14,000 a year. Well, what they're doing is that's if you qualified for everything, and nobody qualifies for everything.
Yeah, but we can't have any, we can't have actual facts like that on the ground. You got to, if it's right wing radio, it's broad sweeping generalizations. Well, just like the nasty Roberts guy talking about women, the popping out babies as a cash crop like Pez dispensers.
Yeah.
I find that beyond repugnant. It's
well, like you said, they want to have the babies that don't want to have abortions, but they don't want to help the children out at all. I don't know, but anyway. But I wanted to tell you about a dream I had.
All right.
I was going to tell you yesterday, and
I am no Joseph interpreter of dreams. Okay, so.
Well, you know, one of my grandmothers that I was raised around, she had her dream books and different things.
Oh, we've got that in our background too. I've got literally a witch doctor in my background.
Well, she was supposed to have been cursed by a witch doctor.
Well, this guy, the witch doctor is sort of a shorthand thing. He was one of those old backcountry healers who could get your sick mule well.
Yeah.
And would tell you what to do and what not to do. And there's a story that's well known through the family about how he told a family not to let this certain woman ever on the property to touch anything that they owned. And they did anyway. And the guy died.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But country living.
Well, and my grandmother, she was into astrology, and of course she didn't know, you know, she went to fortune tellers and all, and I just, that made me crave to go to a fortune teller, you know, when I got up old enough, you know.
Oh, you know what? It's fun.
It's fun
to watch if you know that you're watching a con, it's fun to watch the con work.
Yeah, I was seeking a real one. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
For a real one. But anyway, I'm glad I'm over that. But anyway, my dream was that I was at Bush's going away party in the White House.
Oh, dear.
It wasn't much to it.
You weren't wearing an orange jumpsuit or anything, were you, Juanita?
I don't know. Ooh, I don't think so. But I don't know who I was with, but there was a big room, you know, and they were sitting at smaller tables all around. I've seen pictures like that. And there was only about 10 of us.
Yeah, because nobody was really particularly broken up about him going away.
No,
maybe you were there to slam the door behind him when he left and lock the door and throw away the key.
But I thought, what a dream, you know. I want to be.
Yeah,
there.
You know, that's one of those that you wake from the next morning and go, what? I'm never eating Brussels sprouts before bed again.
Maybe it was the candy.
Could be.
But I have these wild dreams. My family, all of them. And, you know, I had on the same grandmother's side, they dream, which was my daddy's side, they would dream dreams that came true or were, you could actually, it was kind of like that they would be in parables, but they'd be in parables that would make sense. And, you know, like about somebody's death or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway.
Oh, I talk to my parents, my grandparents in my dreams all the time. Don't worry about it. And, you know, while I won't sit here and say that, you know, somebody's got a handle on what everything means or anything, I'm also enough of a realist to grab hold of that line from Hamlet where he says, there is more in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophies.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot of I don't knows. And Frank, but the thing is, I generally don't go in for saying, you know, that this is the concrete answer.
There's a lot of phonies. It,
oh, think. Gosh, yes.
Look at that guy that's on TV, and I don't know if he's the one that told, he was on The View one time about a year ago or less than a year ago, and he told Barbara that she needed to go to the doctor to have her blood checked out. And she said, I don't believe in that. But she said, I thought, well, maybe that's what I should do. And she did have it checked out and everything was fine.
But the power of suggestion is profound.
Yeah. But she had told him, you know, she didn't believe in that. And I guess that's what he did, you know, to try to get a little bit even or something. But I know you know who he is. He talks, I don't know, he's, I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, I can't think of his name right now.
There's another one named John Edwards.
Okay, that's who I was thinking of, was John Edwards, the former ballroom dancer.
Is another one. But when Rosie O'Donnell had her talk show, not when she was on The View.
Yeah, I know.
She said that, I don't know which one it was, but she said one of them told her that she was, you know, her mother died when she was real young. And anyway, she said that I can see all the pictures that your mother, that you have of your mother around. And she said, I knew he was funny because that I don't hardly have any pictures. I have one or two. You know, they were like a lot of people. They couldn't afford to have pictures.
Well, they prey on people's emotions.
Yeah.
No. And look, no less than Pat Robertson, or the Falwell crowd, or Creflo Dollar, or Kenneth Copeland, or Joyce Meyer. They're all involved in the same con, Juanita.
Joyce Myers has got her own magazine, like.
Oh, mercy.
I've been sick.
I thought it was bad enough when Rachel Ray got one.
Huh?
I thought it was bad enough when Rachel Ray got a magazine.
There's something about her I don't like.
How cool is that? Oh, huh? Yeah, she really rubs me the wrong way.
And her stuff she cooks, a lot of it looks disgusting to me. I don't know. It's just, you know how you have those things about people?
I do.
But one more thing, and I'll shut up. You were talking about the beer. You making beer?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of Buck?
Buck. I think
my daddy used to make, that's what he called it. From Southern Georgia. Huh?
And he'd make it himself and, Bach! Bach! And he called it Buck.
He called it Buck. It was, he'd take you know, when you can stuff, whatever, the peelings, he would make it from peelings. He'd make it from pears or peaches, and that stuff would knock your socks off.
Oh, I about betcha. Yeah, absolutely.
He would make it in, you know, I guess everybody had one of them big old black pots, cast iron pots that you used outside for all kind of things.
Yeah.
And he would cook Rundrick stew. Do you ever hear of that?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, he would make the best that anybody could ever think of, and people would come. He would invite he'd make a big old thing of that.
Yeah, we've got a frame and a pot that we use for apple butter making, but I guess it could serve multiple purposes. It's copper.
Yeah, it's all kind of.
You're making me thinking there's going to have to be some outdoor cooking going on. And that's a heck of a time to plant that seed in my head with the dead of winter coming to the mountains, Juanita.
Well, I'm wanting to get one of those solar ovens.
Oh, aren't those neat? Those are.
You know, Ed Begley, he cooks all kind of stuff in them. He cooks the soup and everything.
That would be neat. Hey, Juanita, I got to wander along, dear.
And thank you, and you have a good night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
I love our conversations. I got the Brunswick stew bug. And so that'll wrap the program. Thanks, everybody. What a wonderful evening this was. I really, really appreciate your participation and your company. And I just thank you. And I hope you'll be with us tomorrow night for prayer meeting. Of course, the program tonight couldn't have happened without the dedicated efforts of our chief engineer, John Fox, our IT professional, Peter Godbold. Couldn't have happened without the sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch. More and more, I hope you see why I do refer to them. You know, this isn't their slogan. This is just the way I think about them. The hardest working, bravest people I know. CRMW.net, CoalRiverWind.org, and Printer Water Project. the effort never ceases. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, 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 and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us here this afternoon. Coming to you live from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. Ah, yes. Actually, Estero. How many of you up north have heard of Estero, Florida? It's actually an incorporation in between Naples and Fort Myers, but it's not populated like Naples and Fort Myers. Actually, Naples and Fort Myers are both a stone's throw from the studio, Fort Myers being a little bit closer. Our studio is in Lee County, Florida, which is Fort Myers is the county seat. Anyway, why am I getting into the geography of the thing? It's another beautiful day here in paradise. In the high 70s, air's dry. Beautiful day. Hope it's a nice day where you are as well. Why am I getting all this humming noise here? Oh, well, I guess we'll have to just put up with it. Anyway, today, for those of you who like to keep track of history and historical events, today is the 28th anniversary of the murder of John Lennon. One of my favorite musicians of all time. I have often said that when they study music a couple of hundred years from now at a Heidelberg University or one of the famous music universities, and they study music, that they will in fact be studying Bach, Brahms, Beethoven, Berlioz, some of those folks, and McCartney and Lennon. I do believe that. It's music that will last forever. It's music that touched the heart. It's it was good music. And it's interesting that so many people back in the day when the Beatles first came across the Atlantic, and my father in particular, I remember so well when they came on the Ed Sullivan Show, my father, and oh my God, look at them. Look at that long hair on those guys. Ah, yes, we all heard that. And what a crazy thing it was when they came to the shores of the United States. I remember being in Cleveland, Ohio, when they came to Cleveland. I,